Well, hello everyone. I've always liked to promote different voices, interesting voices in the political scene here on this channel. And the truth is that in current year, a lot of the more interesting stuff being written or produced is over on Substack. And this article by Tom Jones on his Substack, "The Potemkin Village Idiot," caught my eye. As you can see, as I'm recording this, it only has one like. So give him a subscribe, give him a follow if you're on Substack, and hopefully that number will go up after this goes live. But it's about something really interesting, which is, can Labour actually count on the ethnic minority votes going forward? This interests me in all sorts of ways. I mean, really, this is a bit of applied elite theory. You can see the organized minority as against the disorganized mass here on the ground. And it also reminds me of another book called The Logic of Collective Action by Mancur Olson. A conventional wisdom says that Labour import foreigners who then vote for Labour as a client class. But if you go back to Populist Illusion, Bertrand de Jouvenel, and various other writers I've talked about in the past, client groups have a habit of becoming a rival castle. And once that happens, the power centre, in this case Labour, then have to do something about it. It cannot tolerate a rival castle. So it's kind of an interesting thing moving forward. Just before I read this article, I will remind everyone, do pick up courses at the Academic Agency, Trivium, the bestseller there, Foundations of Shakespeare, of course, and many other great courses. Buy it now. But let's not waste any further time and read this article by Tom Jones. Last month, a new political party was formed in Britain, the Independent Candidate Alliance, launched by Ahmed Yacoub and Shakil S. Afsar, the former a solicitor and activist who also contested the West Midlands mayoral contest, the later a community leader who has led protests on LGBT education. And I remember those protests. And at the time, myself and Carl Benjamin had a little bet on who would win. Would the LGBTers win, or would the Muslim bloc win? I can't remember which way we bet now, but I think Carl's money was on the LGBT, but I can't be sure. But we may be getting the answer here. Kashmir and Palestine, both of whom ran in the 2024 general election as part of the wave of independent candidates that ran against Labour in high Muslim population areas after the party was perceived to be weak on Gaza. The party's mission is, according to their website, dedicated to fighting for Birmingham's neglected inner city communities, which have suffered from years of underinvestment and political inaction. In an interview, Yacoub was more direct, stating that the intention was to drive the Labour Party out of power in Birmingham. The party will therefore focus on unseating sitting Labour councillors in areas like including Alum Rock, Lozells, Ladywood, Perry Bar, Aston, Small Heath, Sparkhill, and Spark Brook, all of which again have a large Muslim population. This is absolutely fascinating because suddenly the client group is looking like an enemy of Labour. And, I was saying that Labour may start deporting more people or may reduce immigration more than the Tories. It may not just be a ruse, may not just be a Blairite ruse, but what if these people are no longer a client group? Late last year, after Liverpool City Council officially recognised the Republic of Somaliland, I wrote this piece, and this is another article by Tom Jones here, on how Somali clannishness might affect British institutions and how immigration meant that we must now understand Somali clan politics to understand Liverpool's local government. Superb insight. All politics is minority, organized minority politics, right? And Jones understands this in this article. The launch of this new party is a similar downstream effect of Britain's immigration policy and the increasing influence of clannishness on our politics, in this case, the largely Pakistani Birria Dairy system. Birria Dairy, remember that word. The clan networks are influenced heavily by the family structure. Family is the cornerstone of society in Pakistan, encompassing a wide network of relationships. Extended relatives play a crucial role in daily life, and the vast majority of Pakistanis live in multi-generational households where three, four, or even five generations reside together. The concept of wasta, relationship building, lies at the heart of this family dynamic. Pakistanis tend to rely on their relatives more than anyone else for financial assistance, social support, and job opportunities. With large household sizes, most income is directed towards maintaining the family home. Only the privileged elite, and I'm sure you've all been to a Pakistani-owned corner store where they've got their kids working there, they've got, you know, family members helping out, maybe, Uncle Ahmed comes in for a shift or two. I don't know if they pay them all, but I know that the operation in that corner store is a family affair, okay? Only the privileged elite or those who have migrated to urban areas have adopted a nuclear family structure. Even in such cases, extended relatives often live nearby and continue to depend on one another for financial and social support. Family ties are therefore central to economic survival, employment opportunities, and social mobility. So people tend to rely on their Biradari kinship group for support rather than external institutions. This system fosters a deep sense of loyalty and mutual obligation, where individuals prioritize the interests of their kin over outsiders. This kinship forms the foundation of tribal political organization, with extended families tracing their ancestry back 8 to 10 generations. Within this system, most lineages are interconnected, and power in the tribal structure is directly tied to the strength and unity of one's clan, with greater cohesion translating to greater influence. For a sectional leader to effectively exercise authority, they must unify their clan members. Without their collective support, maintaining power becomes impossible. And there you have one of my favorite things in the world, an elitist triangle, the chief, sectional heads, white bearded. Okay. As a result, Pakistan kinship-based politics, as in South Asia more broadly, is firmly anchored in the politics of clientelism, as noted by two Chinese academics in a paper titled Dynasticism and the Role of Clans in Politicizing Elections in Pakistan. And there's a quote from this Chinese paper. I always find it fascinating, the stuff Chinese academics are working on, by the way. And when I wrote Populist Illusion, I noticed that a lot of Chinese were slyly reading elite theory. A lot of the recent academic papers were coming out of China and Russia. Very noticeable. Anyway, you can conclude that role or behavior of member towards political institutions is influenced and determined by nature of his clan. People have less to say and care about national politics. Their main priority is their clan's affiliations and interests. Clan politics forms parochial political culture, which is injurious for any state, especially democratic ones. And there, in a nutshell, is the answer to a question that I've long asked, right? With the continued re-election of Sadiq Khan in London, I've often said, like, don't these people care about crime? Don't they care about the fact that the city's going to shit? Don't they care about any issues at all? How do they keep on? Like, even within, like, the idea of identity politics, blah, 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 right? They're just voting for this guy because he's got brown skin. Like, what the hell's going on? This passage here explains why they reliably turn out for Sadiq Khan in election after election. Clan, tribe, caste, and Biradari networks not only play a crucial role in influence voting behavior, but also serve to legitimize a family's political control over resources, enabling them to pass wealth and power down through generations as a form of political inheritance. Now, how is all of this affecting Britain? The UK's first-past-the-post electoral system benefits parties with geographically concentrated support, particularly at the local level where turnout is low and communities are more easily accessed. In areas with significant South Asian communities, local politicians form close ties with Birraderi elders or community representatives. For Birraderi leaders, acting as community representatives brought prestige and influence within the South Asian population. Meanwhile, politicians sought to cultivate those relationships, seeing Birraderi elders as gatekeepers to a political bloc vote. This dynamic created a system where politicians became patrons and Birraderi leaders acted as clients, delivering votes in exchange for political favour, what Lewis Baston termed manipulated clan politics. Again, an insight into the kind of rotten boroughs inside London, not just Sadiq Khan. I remember years ago I made a video on how this works in Diane Abbott's little rotten borough there in Hackney. Anyway, the patronage-driven political landscape in constituencies with large Pakistani populations has evolved significantly since the arrivals of large communities via immigration in the 1970s. However, initially, patronage politics primarily involved white politicians engaging with Pakistani community elders who were seen as gatekeepers to insular communities. But by the 1990s, community leaders were no longer content with simply mobilizing votes for politicians. They began standing for office themselves. Birraderi networks proved particularly useful during election campaigns, especially where resources were limited and campaigners were scarce. As one former local council election candidate told the BBC in 2003, you could say you couldn't fight a political fight without using the Birraderi system. This change is largely down to increased immigration from Pakistan into these areas, which created opportunities to influence candidate selection through sheer numbers of paid-up party members. An interviewee for one paper I read stated that at times a single check would be used to pay for large numbers of new party members. Aspiring candidates had a strong incentive to recruit supporters, and politicians seeking election often encouraged Birraderi members to join the party, ensuring they could vote in internal contests and secure their preferred candidate. I hope you remember all this next time Jordan Peterson tells you that individualism is the answer, friends. Anyway, let's carry on. The Citizens Commission on Islam, Participation and Public Life, chaired by then Conservative MP Dominic Grieve QC, described the role of Birraderi networks as playing a fundamental role in the politics of South Asian communities. Louise Casey's government-appointed review on integration in 2016 also noted the use of Birraderi structures in electoral politics, going on to criticise the response of political parties. National political parties seem to consider such activities outside of their concern and not in their interest to curtail where it is not obviously illegal or fraudulent, is bringing large numbers of votes for minimal effort and is considered acceptable practice locally. Disgusting. Labour is particularly reliant on Birraderi networks, primarily due to the fact that many constituencies with large South Asian populations were safe Labour seats. In the early 1990s, Jeff Rucker, then Labour MP for Birmingham Perry Barr, highlighted concerns over the potential misuse of urban renewal grants within patronage networks. He alleged that assistance with grant applications was being offered in exchange for Labour Party membership and votes for Labour candidates. On February the 9th, 1995, he raised the issue in Parliament, warning that such practices were fueling ethnic tensions and contributing to social fragmentation. The matter was debated again later that year when Dame Jill Knight argued that taxpayer money was effectively being used to buy political allegiance and votes for the Labour Party. I want to touch on the extremely unequal way in which money allocated by the government to Birmingham is distributed in what certainly appears to be a blatant attempt to buy votes. Out of 841 grants to voluntary bodies, the lion's share goes to those parts of Birmingham that elect Labour councillors and members of Parliament, Aston, Handsworth, Neckels, Small Heath, Soho, Sparkbrook and Spark Hill, with Ladywood at the top of the list, receiving more than 100 grants, totaling some £7 million. During the same debate, Sir Norman Fowler noted that, as a direct result of those charges, no fewer than four Labour constituency parties have been suspended. This issue was also picked up by David Ritchie in his report following the 2001 race riot in Oldham, which heavily criticised the local political parties. The panel received quite a number of representations, including from well-placed sources in the Labour Party, that the relationship of the party to the Pakistani community had for some time been over-dependent on links to one particular clan. The suggestion was that in return for delivering a sizable vote for Labour, candidates for council seats would be chosen from the clan, and the community leaders would be the principal source of council influence within the Pakistani parts of town. It's just unbelievable this has been happening in our country, by the way, but anyway, let's continue. Until recently, on the one hand, but on the other hand, if you know anything about politics, elite theory, the organized minority, and so on, and about the collective nature of many peoples in the world, none of this is surprising. It was all perfectly predictable from that point of view, but it's still disgusting that this goes on. Anyway, let's continue. Until recently, the Biri Dairy system primarily influenced candidate selection at the local level, where contests were easier to sway due to lower stakes. Biri Dairy leaders held significant power within wards, whereas parliamentary constituencies, being more ethnically diverse, required candidates who could appeal beyond a single community. In fact, given the intense local rivalry between families, selecting a parliamentary candidate with strong ties to one particular Biri Dairy was sometimes avoided to prevent divisions within the broader South Asian vote. Over the past 10 to 15 years, it has become standard practice to select South Asian candidates in parliamentary constituencies with significant South Asian populations. Research using data from the 2010 Ethnic Minority British Election Study highlights the effectiveness of this strategy, showing that Pakistani voters tend to favour Pakistani candidates and are more likely to turn out when such candidates run, especially under the Labour Party banner. This increased influence was partly thanks to Blair's introduction of postal voting for parliamentary selection contests, which no longer required voters to justify why they couldn't attend in person. This reform allowed Biri Dairy leaders to effectively deliver block votes to favoured candidates and in safe seats where the party selection process all but determines the election outcome. And this gave Biri Dairy networks huge clout. Imagine how annoyed you'd be if you mobilise everyone to vote there and this guy comes in and said, look, I represent 1,000, here we go. You know, I've actually been in a real-life scenario where that happened, and a proposal I wanted to bring forward in the Oxford MCR was voted down by a single vote due to proxy voting. I was extremely aggrieved when that happened. Anyway, let's carry on. The huge amount of influence wielded by Biri Dairy elders, however, and their use to reinforce existing power networks has generated resentment from those who don't receive preferment. Former Respect leader Salma Yaqub highlighted this in an interview with two academics studying the Respect Party's campaign strategy, stating, "Politics in large parts of South Asian communities is overwhelmingly a male preserve. From candidates to campaigners, this grip is reinforced by the way in which members of tight family and clan networks are encouraged to vote as a block. In this way, the male head of the household can often control dozens, sometimes hundreds, of votes, which was used to exercise political leverage. This ultimately has quite a corrupting influence on politics, because the determining factor in exercising such influence becomes less about political conviction and more about which candidate will be indebted to you." Brilliant. Brilliant that this goes on. This is a superb article, by the way. Very well researched, in my opinion. Anyway, let's carry on. Respect's success stemmed from its dual critique of postal voting and Biri Dairy-dominated politics, tapping into widespread frustration over the political dominance of certain clans. Their strong anti-war stance or resonated deeply with Muslim voters, making it a key vote winner. To break the hold of the Biridari network's respect focused on increasing turnout, particularly among young and female voters who had previously been disengaged from the political process. This strategy would later prove effective in Bradford 7 years later. Respect, with the early capitalisers on dissatisfaction with the Biridari settlement and the ICA New Party, is very much a development in the same vein. In the video at the top of this article, Afsar says that for far too long, the Labour Party and their councillors have reaped their rewards on the back of our communities. Yakub adds, it is because they are subservient to their leaders rather than the people who put them in power. So interesting, you get this little clan leadership layer on top that has kind of become part of Labour's iron law of oligarchy, and it's suffering like revolt lower down in the communities. The ICA and Gaza independence are not the flowering of some new and mysterious sectarian politics in Britain. These clannish forces have been at the play for decades, but contained within the institution of the Labour Party. The Gaza issue has simply forced a clear separation. What we are now seeing may simply be true clannish politics at play, of different Biridari networks against each other, all out in the open, but clothed in the language of British politics. Birmingham is, thanks to its large South Asian population, the crucible of this. But there seems to be no reason to suggest that we won't see it replicated elsewhere. Biridari networks are by their nature self-interested, so it seems unlikely that anywhere will have enacted a form of enlightened Biridarism that has managed to share the rewards of political power equally. Unless perhaps a politician emerges who can harness the networks while being separate to them. It's possible we are already seeing this in a decision by white politicians in Birmingham, such as Jess Phillips, to take such a hardline stance on issues like Gaza, but as shown by the fact that a Gaza independent, Jodie McIntyre, ran against her, and that she was the target of high levels of abuse during her campaign, as was Shabana Mahmood, the Labour candidate against Yakub. It may not be enough. It may be that the future of British politics looks a lot like George Galloway. Really fascinating article, and he's got many more like that. So, like I say, if you enjoyed that, give him a subscribe, pick up a course at the academic agency, let me know what you think. This was really a bit of an eye-opener. I mean, we all had an idea that this sort of thing goes on, but to see it all laid out like that really is interesting. It's also interesting from the point of view of what Labour will do now. I mean, you know, it could be that in some places they decide to cut their losses and, you know, go back to trying to appeal to Joe Bloggs, the white working man, which they have done in some areas, i.e. with the anti-immigration rhetoric. Very interesting indeed. And Labour have got a decision to make about how they're going to navigate this. And I think the country has got a decision to make about how much longer it tolerates this. I mean, it'd be basically going on in broad daylight for decades. I mean, I was never asked about this, were you? Doesn't really matter, I'm afraid, because in the real world, this is how politics works. All right, I'll be back later on for office hours. See you later. If you like this video, be sure to like and subscribe. You can join the channel for thousands of hours of past shows in the archive and hundreds of videos. If you have any questions, you can leave a super chat or a super thanks, and I'll be sure to pick it up during my weekly office hours, which run every Tuesday afternoon. I also provide courses at the academic agency, which I encourage people to buy. Thousands of students now have taken the Trivium to improve their skills in writing, logic, and rhetoric. Just 3 of many courses available. Buy it now. But most importantly of all, friends, get out.